Hello, this is Eric Sinrod. Thanking you ever so much for joining us for Tech Law 10, where Jonathan Armstrong, my partner in London, and I cover fast-breaking developments where the law and information technology intersect, and we're partners at Duane Marsh. Now, Jonathan, I know that you've been traveling about on business and you've been somewhat of an accidental tourist, but tell us about your recent thoughts regarding accidental internet outlaws.
Yeah, my pleasure. I think, I mean, the first thing to say is that, and we say it many, many times, Eric, on these podcasts, social media is great. It has revolutionized our personal and business lives. But I've been involved with this campaign here in the UK called Accidental Outlaw. It's run by Know the Net as a not-for-profit educational type initiative. And they've been doing some surveys which says that 60%, almost two-thirds of people in the UK are at risk of becoming accidental outlaws when they unwittingly use the internet to do something or say something which is against the law. So what do we mean by that? The issue tends to be that I think, and again this is a theme that we've said many times in the past, that in the past, if we were to be a conventional broadcaster, then we'd go through some sort of training and there'd be checks and balances about what we said online. But I was reflecting on this a fortnight ago when my 14-year-old daughter walked into a mobile/cell phone shop as a 14-year-old girl and walked out effectively as a broadcaster. She has in her new smartphone the ability to shoot pretty high quality video, to upload that onto YouTube, and to be and to almost instantly run her own broadcast channel. And I made her sit this test, as any responsible parent would. There's an online test that goes with the campaign at www.knowthenet.org.uk, and I made her sit the test almost as you would make somebody sit a driver's license before you let them in a car. I made my poor daughter sit down and prove to me that she'd got some good results on this test. So what we're testing online, and it's partly, there's legal substance behind it, but partly it's a bit of fun, is you're giving people all sorts of different online scenarios to work out if they can if they can determine whether they're going to get into trouble or not. So it's things like you're at a concert, you upload a film of that concert, does that get you into difficulty? You read a book and you review it and you say naughty things about the author, does that get you into trouble? You know, you right-click on a photograph and move that across to your website, does that get you into trouble? Now, the surprise, of course, or the not surprise, I guess, to the average people who tune into Tech Law 10 is that, of course, all of those can get you into trouble. But only 40% of people who sat the preliminary survey knew the difference between legal and illegal activity. And today's the first day of the online test. And from what I've seen, people seem to be hovering between scores of about 55 and 65. The lower the score, the better. So they're theoretically at risk. You know, the majority of their activities online are potentially exposing them to risk. And the site then goes on to allow people to improve their online behaviors. They can download articles where they can see real-life cases of where people have got into trouble on the internet. And it has simple tips like ignorance of the law is no excuse. Something that you think is humorous might not be viewed as humorous in the cold light of day. So, for example, in the UK, we've had these actions over civil unrest where people have started up Facebook campaigns or posted on Twitter, you know, there's a riot going on in X location, let's go down and join in. And some people have been sentenced to 4 years in prison for that. And we're also saying that there's no such thing as strength in numbers on the internet. So just because other people are there at the same Sesame Street reunion concert, let's say, for example, Eric, and videoing it and posting it online, that doesn't necessarily mean to say that that's safe to do. So what the whole campaign's trying to emphasize, really, is that the digital world is revolutionary. Social media has changed our lives. But it's critical to know the difference between right and wrong behaviors online. And we've seen already, and you might be able to hear the sirens in the background, which maybe is somebody with the wrong activities. And one of the critical things, I think, is that obviously teenagers, the younger, are vulnerable. And I've been doing some work at my daughter's school with people who are in the stage of applying for job interviews. And if you look at their online profile, it's easy to see that their careless behavior, which traditionally wouldn't have been an issue. You know, people would have talked about it round the old coal fire in the 1950s, and it would have gone no further. But now your bad behavior spreads worldwide and across the world. And so what this initiative is trying to do is try and improve people's online behavior and explain the risks to them. And I wondered, Eric, after that monologue, if there was anything similar in the U.S., and if there was any call for something similar in the U.S., or are people in the U.S. much less likely, do you think, to get caught and face bad consequences of their online behavior?
Well, I must say that was quite the soliloquy, and I want to thank you. I have to note two things. You know, A, Jonathan seems to know a lot about being a cyber outlaw, and B, we start hearing sirens. So put the length of the chain together for you. You know, even though we have these education campaigns, it still seems like there's a significant percentage of people that don't always get it right from a legal standpoint, you know, whether there's copyright infringement, whether there's privacy invasions, whether somebody's being defamed, you know, that's listed in this report. And perhaps the reason is because, you know, what are the real consequences? You know, how many people really will get caught and suffer as a result? You know, there must be just so many instances of people sharing copyrighted music, you know, not en masse, but a song here, an album there. People, you know, writing pieces on the internet where they've taken information from others. You know, the list goes on and on. And probably the truth of the matter is, most of the time, the legitimate lawful rights are not going to be enforced. And if they are, there might not be a severe consequence. That's not to say there shouldn't be education, because, you know, there always is a risk. But let me throw it back on you on that in terms of, you know, what the real downside is for somebody if they don't get it right.
I think there's something in what you say. I mean, I think the consequences of them getting caught are relatively slight, but I'd say two things to that. I think, firstly, more and more employers are looking at people's online behavior. So if you're applying for a job as a lawyer and your online activity discloses some unlawful or illegal activity, then obviously in a tough recruitment environment as it is at the moment, you're much less likely to get that job. And I think the second thing to say is that there are people who are being permanently blighted for what they have done online. So sometimes their activity is permanent. I mean, the UK press, for example, over the weekend had, if you like, the end result of quite an amusing story that had been in the press of a stepmother of a groom who was about to get married. I don't know whether it reached the US. And it was a long tirade against the fiancé of the stepson, saying, you know, you only get married in a castle if you are royalty or have no class. And this bride went to the wedding, you know, months later, with a specially made veil over her head because of the number of paparazzi that were around the church who'd somehow got knowledge of it and were trying to snap that photograph of her on her wedding day. I know of another case of an individual who was employed by a financial services institution. He went onto a soccer forum online and disclosed details carelessly and without thinking of a couple of soccer players' wages that he'd got off the bank's database. The guy lost his job. He has criminal convictions. He's unlikely ever to be able to work in the financial services sector again because he might find difficulty fitting, you know, the, effectively passing the fit and proper test for certain occupations within financial services. He was living in a house with a subsidized mortgage paid for, you know, this, on a concessionary rate from his bank, the employer, so lost that. From what I hear, he lost his house. So this is somebody who's never going to work again in their chosen profession, doesn't have a job, and doesn't have a house because of what? 60 seconds of online activity. So it seems to me that the incidents are rare. They're becoming more common. But there's permanent blight on people who do wrong things online, stupid things usually, not malicious things. And it seems to me that it's responsible to call out those potential consequences for people, particularly those people, we've talked about this before, who are at the younger age group, who are living their lives online these days. And it's very hard to erase your online memory. You know, the internet has the memory of an elephant. It never forgets.
If I can jump into your second soliloquy. No, you're making a very good point. And I actually set you up in a way because I don't want anybody to take or get the impression that I was encouraging people not to pay attention to lawful requirements, because Jonathan's absolutely right. There can be severe consequences. What you do online can live forever, and the downside repercussions can be permanent. So even though there's no 100% certainty that you will suffer negative consequences for violating the law, you might. And that's a reality, and it's a very good idea to educate and train people when they're young, because you also develop internet and online habits. And if your habits are such that you're skirting the law when you're young, they might continue on till you finally find yourself, as we say in the United States, in a legal pickle where you don't want to be. Okay, I think we've run a little bit long, but this is a very important issue, and I'm very glad you're participating, and thank you for sharing it with us. This has been Eric Sinrod and Jonathan Armstrong from Duane Morris with your weekly Tech Law 10. You can reach us by email. My email is ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. Jonathan will give his in a moment. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter, we're on LinkedIn, and we encourage you to engage in dialogue with us. Jonathan, you want to wrap it up?
Yeah, I'm JP Armstrong at DuaneMorris.com. I'll post the link to that online test on the in the LinkedIn group. So to access that, you just pull down the box that says Tech Law 10. You'll find our LinkedIn group there. The link will be there. Obviously, if you get a score of around about 15% or less, that's my daughter's record currently. Post your score there. Share it with people. It'd be very interesting. I'm throwing down the gauntlet now. It'd be very interesting to see people's scores. And I'm hoping that those of you who listen to our podcast on a regular basis can beat 15% and get down to nil risk. But let's see. Thanks as ever for listening. And do keep your suggestions for topics coming. We look forward to speaking to you again next week. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.